And welcome back to Build Live at Build Live 2018, powered by Channel 9. As you can tell, it is day three, so I am stumbling on my words. I'm Christina Warren, and you just finished watching a great session with Channel 9's own Seth Juarez. We've got more content for you coming up, but in the interim, I'm super excited about this. This is something that I wanted to talk about, and the people who are on stage with me today actually had a theater session at Build, but I'm joined by two members of the Twitter team, joined by Charlie Kroom. You are an engineer at Twitter,
yep.
And I'm joined by Jesser Shaw,
yeah.
Who is a product manager at Twitter, and I'm also joined by Aaron
Gustafson,
Who is works on web evangelism, accessibility,
yeah, web standards,
and accessibility and evangelism at Microsoft, and we're going to be talking about the talk that Charlie and Jesser gave was about Twitter's brand new progressive web app that recently launched alongside the release of the April 2018 Windows 10 update. And there's been a lot of talks at Build and in the developer community in general about progressive web apps. I thought it would be really great for us to kind of talk about Twitter's story when it comes to progressive web apps and why you guys decided to go from a native app to a progressive web app and what that process was like and what the pluses and minuses are and what are some of the integrations that Windows developers can do on their end to make their PWA more Windows-like.
Mm-hmm.
So, Charlie, if you want to give us a little bit of background about how we got here. I mean,
sure.
A lot of people before the most recent update, before the blog post that you guys put out last week,
yep.
So when the announcement happened, you know, there was a native UWP Twitter app in the store. Now, it hadn't been updated in a while.
Right.
It didn't have all the latest features. You couldn't do, you know, group chat. There was a lot of stuff that wasn't with it. You couldn't have polls, that sort of thing. But it was native, and a lot of people liked it.
Yep.
It also worked on mobile for the few, you know, Windows 10 mobile diehards out there. We do love you, but it is time to move on. So what's the story? How did you guys get to where you are?
Well, like you mentioned, we wanted to have a lot of the latest features, and we want to get to a point where we can bring in those things in real time to both Windows, the website, and our Android and iOS clients. And I think Jesser can talk a little bit more maybe about the one client sort of approach. But
yeah, basically, we want to bring the latest updates to all clients at once and kind of instead of having multiple clients where we have multiple developers working on them, having one strong core client allows us to do that. And we don't want to leave any client behind because we're making updates across like safety and abuse and also like bringing features like bookmarks to help you stay more informed and give you the stuff that actually matters to you.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that I think maybe didn't get mentioned is in the native app, you actually couldn't report abusive content and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's something we get for free as we move to this progressive web app approach. So it's really nice to be able to make sure that all those changes we make going forward are included on the Windows platform as well.
I just want to do a quick call because I missed this at the top of our segment. If you have a question for us, if you're able to log in online while you're watching the live stream and ask a question, do that. Or if that's not working, you can tweet at CH9, our Twitter handle, and let us know your questions for Charlie and Jesser and Aaron as we talk about this approach. And you were saying before, I mean, was Twitter responsible for the last Windows app?
Yeah, so we consulted a bit on it, but it was actually developed by a third party for Twitter. And we don't have any C# developers at Twitter. You know, most people at Twitter are working in Scala, which is our backend framework that we use, or our backend language that we use. And all of the web developers in the web community are generally comfortable with JavaScript. It's something you see a lot of movement even now to sort of forget the complications of CSS and just do it all in JavaScript. So we wanted to make sure that we played to our strengths, and by making sure that everyone can develop on the same language, it's a lot easier for us to sort of do things only in JavaScript.
So when you were kind of taking the approach of looking at, is a progressive web app the right option? Is this the best way where we can, I think your blog post, it was mentioned, you know, we're more committed to the Windows desktop than ever. When you were kind of making the decision, what requirements did you have for a progressive web app before you said, this is going to be good enough to deliver the experience that our users want?
So we kind of took a step back and we kind of looked at who our Windows users are, and we used like the Insider program to understand that because we didn't necessarily have a clear sense when we started out. And so we looked at kind of the stuff that desktop users were doing and kind of wanted to bring that back to the PWA. And Charlie can talk a little bit more about like the different, like how we thought about white screen versus small screens.
Yeah, so our PWA actually started as a very small Windows-only app, and we actually started with just doing it logged in. So we sort of expanded our milestones and our goals, just like you would expand a PWA, right? Our process expanded as well. So after we did the logged in mobile, we did all mobile, and then as we did the Windows app, I believe 70% or so of our Windows users are desktop users. And so we found it really important to address wider screens, address mouse gestures that, you know, people don't do on mobile as much, hovers, things like that. One of the cool pieces of feedback we got when we did the Insider build was people really wanted to be able to paste images into Compose.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that when we had been working on the mobile app and that roadmap, no one pastes an image on their phone. You know, you always go and choose the file or the image.
Some people
directly.
Do. I do. I copy
you
image.
Paste it. You copy.
I copy an image from like Google search or wherever, and then I paste it. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah. And on Windows, what we're seeing is a lot of people just screenshot. You know, you snap a screenshot in your games.
Yep.
And you just want to paste it into Twitter.
Absolutely.
So that was one of those really small things, but a very disparate use case between those. So we tried to identify a lot of those things. There's still some we know about and are trying to sort of figure out how it'll work. But that's one of the main things we did, was just to even get it into Windows, it's a different platform. It's a different form factor that you're addressing. And so we started with a form factor and then looked at bringing that form factor to Windows.
Yeah. I think one of the nice things about the PWA approach is that, you know, as they come up with these additions that they want to add to the app, new features they want to bring out and stuff like that, they don't have to go through the whole build for each platform, then deploy to each platform, get approved by the store for each platform, wait for everybody to download it for each platform. So it kind of cuts out all of that, and they can deliver immediately new experiences for the most part. I mean, there are some features that if they want to light up a certain feature in Windows, they need to roll a new package and send it to the store. But other than that, for web-based updates, for JavaScript-based stuff, they can just light that up and immediately everybody will get it, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
To build on Aaron's point, I think one of the biggest advantages to having the app in the same code base now is if we build this feature for Windows, paste into Compose, it means that desktop web users get that as well. It means that anywhere we deploy this web code, people are going to get that benefit. So when we do get, you know, night mode on mobile web, it's automatically going to come to Windows. It's automatically going to come to our APK, to KaiOS, and so forth.
Yeah.
We wanted to take a more user-centric approach while building this. That was also, like with the PWA, we're also building a common interface. So if you switch between clients, which over 60% of people who use the PWA do, you're kind of, you're getting a similar experience, and like you carry that familiarity across clients, so you're not switching between two really different experiences, and you kind of, like you build patterns, and you can go and do that on multiple clients. Mm-hmm.
Should we take a look at the app just so people who watch at home do it? So if we can switch to my my computer, I've got the app tab to. So you download the app from the Microsoft Store.
Yep.
If you're on an older version of Windows, you won't get some of the same features, but you can just go to, is it twitter.com/mobile?
Mobile.twitter.com. And that's how you can check out the PWA on any platform.
Okay.
And so this one, it's going to work best if you have the RS4 or the
April 2018
update.
Release of Windows 10, which I do. And so once you install, I've decided to pin this to my taskbar, and I can even right click, and as you can see.
Yeah. So this is one of the first integrations. It's really simple to do if you're an app developer, but it just gives you a way to link more deeply into your app. So if there's certain tasks that are really frequent on Twitter, you know, it's two clicks to open Twitter and then compose a tweet. Here you can just hit new tweet, and it should hopefully open you right onto the composer.
Yeah, and so this is actually taking me full screen, but I could actually go smaller. I'm going to say, hello, live from @channel9, and...
So it's a nice little way to accomplish some of the tasks you might do commonly faster.
And the way I'm looking at this right now, this is full screen. This basically looks like if I just went to Twitter.com.
Right, mobile.twitter.com. Yeah, you'd see the same thing.
Or even if I just went to the desktop, it's kind of a similar view. But if I make this smaller, I can obviously kind of have this more, you know, off to the side and then pull up my notifications.
Yeah, and you can dock it to the side.
And then again, you've got the jump list support for notifications, direct messages, et cetera, and it'll take you right there.
Yep.
That's very cool. So, Aaron, how important is it, or how difficult is it, I guess I should say, and Charlie and Yasser, you can talk about this too, how difficult is it to implement these Windows-specific PWA features into your existing code base?
So, I mean, the neat thing is that all of the Windows internals, so things like being able to create the jump lists or being able to access dark mode and those sorts of things, all exist within a namespace in JavaScript. Mm-hmm. So you don't have access to those just in the browser.
Right.
But once you're an installed PWA, you're basically granted permission to access that sort of information. So that's where you can start to do integrations like they've done with being able to share to Twitter or share from Twitter, and it becomes a native share client effectively within Windows, being able to eventually turn on dark mode, being able to do these sorts of lists, being able to do live tiles. All of that stuff can be accessed and run directly from JavaScript, which is pretty awesome. And Charlie can speak to the difficulty.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting starting out with that, because it was definitely, the docs were built around sort of C# and that. And so some of them are in JavaScript. Some of them just take a little bit of massaging to get them just the way you want them, which is interesting. But
yeah. We're working on the docs. We're working on improving it.
And a lot of this is helpful, because as we discover these issues, you know, we can share them with other PWA developers.
So
it becomes easier in the future. They're actually building right now, one of the cool things they talked about at Build is a list of sort of the 15 most common things that you might want to use in the Windows interface. So those share things, looking up dark mode, things that a lot of websites are going to be doing, and they have code snippets there. So it's going to get easier to just copy and paste that or pick and choose the ones you want.
Yeah, we've been building kind of one-off demo PWAs that are just basically reduced test cases to show the code for how to do this one specific thing. And then, it'll be in PWA Builder as well for people to be able to kind of put that stuff together. And the neat thing is, from a performance standpoint, because PWAs are about performance as well,
I was going to add that.
The Windows RT API is like any JavaScript code you have related to that could be lazy loaded, as opposed to being something that you're forcing your iOS client or your Android client and stuff to download. So you check for the existence of the window.windows object, and then load in, once if that returns true, then you can load in your additional.
Which I have to say, people loved that. It's like a weird naming quirk that just happened where it's window.windows. But people were doing code reviews like, is this really the way that we have to do it? And I was like, it's just a fun little gotcha.
I mean, one of the cool things is, because we're dealing with a PWA, we're dealing with Service Worker, we're dealing with, you know, we have access to the cache API and stuff like that, those WinRT JavaScript files can then be stored in the cache and they never have to be downloaded again. So again, what were the stats, Charlie and Jesser, for the native UWP client for space on disk versus the PWA? Do you remember?
I'm not exactly sure. The PWA is under a megabyte.
I think it was like 160K or something like that for the PWA.
It's very small. And it actually depends on which pieces you use, right?
So
like you mentioned, we do the sort of progressive downloading. So if you never go to, I don't know, the Explore page, then you don't download a lot of the components required to display the Explore page.
Right.
And on Windows, you would get the Windows bundle, you know, which adds a little bit. So it's nice that each user is getting the right experience and the right download size for them as well.
Definitely.
Which is a major perk.
So we've got actually a couple of questions. So Adam has two questions. One, he says, is dark theme support coming?
Yes. Okay. So that is one of the biggest things we get as a request. And there's people right now working on it. So hopefully soon it's coming.
It's coming soon. And he also says, is there any word on My People integration?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of integrations possible. Someone was just DMing me last night with some code name of some API I hadn't even heard of. And I was like, send me the documentation on it, because we'll see what's available. But obviously, we're prioritizing certain things. Dark mode is requested by basically everyone. And that's something that's not just going to benefit the Windows users, but will benefit our entire user base.
Well, definitely, because a lot of us really like dark mode. It's beautiful, especially if you've got an OLED, you know, phone or something else. Yeah, it really looks nice. So that's great.
Yeah.
And I always say, everyone on the team uses Twitter as well. And so, trust me, we all want dark mode as much as our users do.
Well, no, I'm glad. I'm glad. And we have another question, which is, what was involved, speaking of the dark theme, like what was involved in creating that, and was it hard? Did you learn anything from that process?
So the Windows portion of just checking whether Windows has dark mode or not is actually really trivial. You can see the demo, I think, online at preview.pwabuilder.com.
I think they've got it up there. Yeah. I've also got one, I think it's at win dark mode. pwa.azurewebsites.net or whatever.
That part's really easy.
Okay. Yeah.
The big thing we dealt with is actually we use React Native Web for sort of our underpinning support as a framework, and React, obviously.
Right.
And it was about building the theming system on top of that. Because once you have a theming system, it's easier. But the thing you don't realize is when we originally went in and we said, oh, this is white and this is white, sometimes those are two different whites. You know, this could be white in any theme, and this could be white as a background, which means it's actually black in dark mode. Mm-hmm. So you can be really careful as you develop your app to not use naming, name things how they're used. So see, this is background color, not white or not black. And that makes it a lot easier to sort of do the theming going forward.
Mm-hmm. But those are just, in some cases, those are really like dev best practices.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, they're things that we all kind of take you know, for granted, but those are really just best practices because you don't know what the setup on a user's machine might be.
Yep. And then the second part of it is figuring out there's a lot of different theming solutions for React right now and how you do your styling. And so finding one that works for you and works for the way you use it and the code base, and then making sure that it's everything actually gets themed. You know, you don't have just the old theme getting picked up and people can actually dynamically switch that. So it's been really cool to see. Someone on the team did actually a code mod that's been amazing to see how fast they can sort of fix a lot of places where we made some simple mistakes or we just needed to update some stuff. So code mods for the win.
Yeah.
So you guys are saying React is basically your backend, and that's and so is the PWA basically written in React Native? Is that?
Yeah. So the React Native is basically this interface or sort of this system that then you can fill it out with a library. So we use React Native Web. One of the guys who used to work at Twitter, Nicholas Gallagher, currently maintains and developed React Native Web. And so that basically takes any time we say a view is sort of a basic element. And in the web world, that view gets translated into a div, usually. But if you say this is a view that is an accessibility role of a button, then it might become a button element in HTML. In Android or iOS, they can take those same properties, that same view element, and it might go into something else. I'm not going to embarrass myself with my iOS development knowledge, but it'll turn into something.
Right.
And it would be cool to see, actually. I don't think there's one right now. There's no React Native, you know, UWP or React Native C#, but
I don't know.
It could potentially be something that comes along. The whole idea is you have the standard interface for layout and development.
We're just gonna put that out there. If anybody out there wants to work on a React Native UWP or C# toolkit, that would be amazing because it would probably make a lot of people's jobs easier. There's another. This is actually a great question, because this comes up a lot when people are looking at maybe wanting to switch from one type of app to another, makes the decision on what direction they go in is. Is it hard to update? Like, what's the process? What are the issues with caching? How do you update your app once it's been released and deployed, especially when you're in the Microsoft Store?
Yeah, so as Aaron mentioned, I think one of the main benefits of a PWA is that we can deploy it like we deploy our website already. So we actually do it every day. There's no approval process. We just deploy the updates. There are very few integrations with Windows that actually require an update in the Microsoft Store.
Right.
One of the things we actually ran into is we release so fast and we change things so quickly, people look for release notes, and they're not in the store. So how do they figure out what's new? And that's something where it's like a good side effect of PWAs. We're trying to figure that out. With
that could be an interesting candidate for like a push notification.
That would actually be interesting.
Yeah, something like that, or something in the app, because it's something that traditional apps have that solved for by the store, but we're still figuring out.
Although some of the stores hide, you know, how easy it is to find the notes if updates are updated automatically or whatever. Actually, you mentioned notifications. Speaking of notifications, that's one of the big advantages of using a PWA as well, right? Is that with the Windows integration, it can actually get as of April 2018 update because of service workers, it can get notifications. So that's one of the big things. It's not just having the website open in your browser tab. Yeah. It's actually, I can have it, you know, on my taskbar, and then I can get a notification the native way when someone mentions me or sends me a direct message. Is that correct?
Exactly. And it's great, too, because you get whatever integrations your OS has. So you have Do Not Disturb mode or privacy mode or whatever it is on different systems. It'll be respected. So those push notifications will go into Notification Center and Mac OS and, you know, the Windows notification tab and the Android notification bar. So each platform has a different way of handling notifications. But from our perspective as developers, we just use the web API to do push notifications, and it just works on multiple platforms. It's really cool.
And that's one of the things I've gotten from people who've been working in Windows and who developed hosted web apps before PWAs became a thing. They were like, well, we've had notifications in Windows from web for a while, but that was tailored specifically to Windows, and this is a web standard for push notifications, so the same client code works in Android, iOS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you're not writing something unique for each of those platforms. You're writing it once and deploying it everywhere, which is a much nicer solution, honestly.
So you're talking about, you know, hosted web apps, which used to be kind of a thing. What would you say from your guys' experience, what is kind of the fundamental difference if somebody says, I used to do a hosted web app, why should they, and maybe it didn't work out so well, why should they be considering PWAs now?
I feel like, Aaron, maybe you can speak the most.
I mean, a hosted web app effectively was the precursor to PWA.
Yeah.
So a PWA is, if you built a hosted web app and you were happy with it, if you have it under HTTPS and you have a web app manifest and you have a service worker, it is effectively a PWA. I mean, it's all web as native, effectively.
Sure.
So there's not a whole lot of difference between the two of them. For people that maybe had issues with doing hosted web apps previously and weren't happy with the results, I think the web's come a long way. We have a lot more APIs now. You have a lot more control with service worker over how you're handling offline stuff, whereas we only had, you know, the app cache previously, which was not a terribly fun way to manage offline. So there's a lot more that we can do now, and we can create richer experiences for people who have the ability to take advantage of those progressive enhancements.
And I think a common misconception is that a PWA is a total app rewrite. You have to remake your website, and you know I didn't make a PWA, so I have to remake it as one.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point, is that you're gradually adding these pieces and requirements on top. And so really to get started with a PWA, all you sort of need is a manifest, a service worker, and HTTPS,
yeah.
which you know, makes it secure, which you should have anyways.
Exactly.
At this point.
I think there's also another misconception that if you're building a PWA, it has to be a single-page app, or it has to be a JavaScript framework, or you need to use React, or you need to use this, that, and the other. You don't. You can build whatever. You could have a static, you know, Jekyll-based site that's just HTML files, mm-hmm. and as long as you have that web app manifest and a service worker, you know, it's under HTTPS, it's a PWA. There's no restrictions on what it is that you can make a PWA. So the first edition of my book, Adaptive Web Design, I have online as HTML. I turned it into a PWA so people could basically
awesome.
Install it and read it offline. Like that's just a good way to go, and it's all static HTML, right?
Like, I feel like more than anything, it's a style of development.
Exactly.
It's the idea of making sure that you have a great base experience, and then you can build on top of it in little ways, that it's a very iterative, short cycle development method.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is, if people don't have a client that can support things like Service Worker, then the user's not really missing out. They're just getting a better experience if they do have Service Worker. So it's not like there's a barrier to entry from a client standpoint either.
Just your product manager, what are some of your hopes and dreams to make the PWA better in the future? What are some things that you would like to be able to see in the future or add to the experience?
Well, night mode, but that's coming soon, obviously. I think offline support would be great because what the expansion of the PWA, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it universally accessible across a variety of networks. So that's something that the team is also thinking about potentially.
Yeah, one of the things I really like about the new one is, as we noted, you get some of the safety features as well, but bookmarks is something
Jessica
actually, she worked on that. She spearheaded that.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And for people who are Twitter users but might not be familiar because it's a fairly new feature, tell us about what Twitter bookmarks are and how they're different than just me liking everything that I ever want to save.
Yeah.
So Twitter bookmarks essentially allows you to save something for later, and it puts in a chronological order. So even if it's a tweet from 8 years ago and you saved it, it'll save it in the correct order that you bookmarked it.
And I love that feature.
Yeah.
Many times, I think a lot of us, we're kind of ad hocing, you know, liking things. And because the order of likes is based on when the tweet was sent, if it was an older tweet, it would be, you know, very hard to go back
and... It's funny the number of workarounds we saw that people had for bookmarks.
Yeah.
So, you know, we added this and we test everything. We sort of see, and as we looked at some of the metrics, it's like, oh, there's a few less likes and there's a few less DMs. Because people were, as we talked to our users and we did the user research around this, they're DMing it to themselves as well, which is kind of a workaround for bookmarks.
Yeah. I had an if this then that task that took anything that I liked and saved it to a spreadsheet.
Same. Well, I had a pin board.
Yeah.
I had pin board integration.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time I would, you know, like something, if it had a URL attached, it would save the URL to Pinboard.
Yep.
We got a couple other questions. This one, is there any possibility of making the Twitter PWA part of a Fluent design app?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to this. So the first is our approach as a company to design. I think we try and have, as Jesser mentioned earlier, consistent design across platforms, because a lot of our users do use Twitter, you know, on their Android phone during the day and on their desktop computer at night, or vice versa. So being able to find all those actions within the app is really valuable. And then the second part is, there was some talks at Build about this, actually, with being able to do a major component of Fluent design is sort of that blurred see-through to the background. I believe you can't, Aaron can correct me, can't do that right now, but it's something
Not right now on the web, but it's something that that folks have been working on in the standards bodies to come up with a non-hacky way to accomplish that.
So in the future, it's possible, but right now, I think we'll probably stick with the current
design. I think there's a fine line there. I mean, I think from a user standpoint, it's nice sometimes to have apps feel like they're part and parcel of the OS. But then, you know, as you guys are talking about, like, from a branding perspective and from a consistency perspective, it's really important for actual user experience for you to have a consistent experience within one app from platform to platform. So I could see Twitter maybe adding a few flourishes that are slightly Windows-esque within the Windows context. Yeah. I don't know that there would be huge value. Obviously, you guys would be the ones to decide that. But for me personally, you know, thinking about it as a product person, that consistency of experience from platform to platform would be the more important thing for me than having it look like the OS that it's on. So it's kind of like, I remember before I came to Microsoft years ago, I was in client services, and we had a client come to us, and they were like, okay, we instead of checkboxes, we want to be able to have the switch controls, and we want them to look like iOS. And this was when iOS 6 was out, and 7 was on the forefront.
Okay, so it was still skeuomorphic, but it was about to go to the flat design.
Exactly. And so I was like, so which one do you want to map to? And so, like, how far do you want to take this, and how many Android skins do you want to map this to, and how much do you want to maintain this over time? Because it's just going to become heaps and heaps of code, and you're going to have all of this testing code to figure out which design do we apply,
right?
Or do we just use a checkbox?
This isn't as big of an issue because of the power of PWAs, but if you have multiple device types you're targeting, if one can't be updated and you have an inconsistent experience across those, we see that a lot with set-top boxes, where the Netflix experience that was built, you know, like 5 years ago is now very different. And so for Twitter's perspective, I'm sure for users, you want people to know, you know, where to find notifications, where to get mentions, where to be able to search. And if those things change, you don't want it to be confusing. That said, I also, as like a native app lover, I understand the concern that people might have of, I want it all to kind of look consistent. And that's why things like dark mode, and maybe if we can get some standards things involved to map to some of the, you know, blurred background stuff, we can have maybe a happy medium.
Yep, exactly.
All right, so we're about running out of time. We're about to go to our next live session, live stream, our next session. But where can people find more about the Twitter PWA, and where can they find out more about PWAs in general?
The Twitter PWA, you can always check out mobile.twitter.com. We tweet with some of the updates from @TwitterEng, I believe.
Okay.
Or just @Twitter.
@Twitter or @TwitterEng, okay.
And we have some blog posts, I think, coming with a little bit more about the app. And you can always check out our session, I think, is posted online on the Channel 9 archives.
Excellent. Yeah.
And we have a lot of docs on the Microsoft Edge Dev blog about it. We have a couple sessions. We had a total of, I think, 6 sessions that were PWA or PWA adjacent here at Build. PWA Builder is another great resource, pwabuilder.com.
PWA Builder, and also NVN has some docs all up for people who are building PWAs for cross platforms, if people want to see what service worker, what features are supported on which device.
Yeah.
And I also want to note that I did an interview, it might already be live on our YouTube channel, last night with Kyle Fluke and with Jeff from the Edge team to give a more general overview of PWA. So if you are kind of looking for a more high level look at that, check out that video and check out the blog post as they mentioned. The app is also in the Microsoft Store if you just search Twitter. And PWA Builder and the Edge Block.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it.
And you can always reach us on Twitter too.
Okay.
Of course.
Gotta put that plug in there.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Tweet. Just tweet. Like if you have an issue or questions.
Yep.
We're all on Twitter. Yep. You guys are on Twitter, obviously.
We all get the issue. Yeah.
it's kind of part of the job. All right.
Great.
Well, thank you all so much for joining me, and now on to the next one.